You're very welcome to the next in our series of podcasts. My name is Martin Walsh and I'm Daon's Chief Legal Counsel. Today's topic was chosen by that rarest of things in today's world, consensus. The topic today is the California Consumer Privacy Act, or CCPA. Quite a few of Daon's customers have already raised queries with regard to the CCPA, and hopefully today's guest interviewee will be able to assist me and us with this new and born law. Our guest is not only a great lawyer, but he's a man with a great lawyer's name, Elliot Golding. And Elliot, you're very welcome to the interview today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Elliot is a partner at the well-known global law firm Squire Patton Boggs and is a man extremely conversant with CCPA. He's been involved in the data and privacy world for many years now, including working in areas such as HIPAA, Graham, Leach, Bliley, the payment card industry, data security standards, breach responses, information governance programs, you name it, he's been involved in it. He also has several positions under the American Bar Association Science and Technology section. He's co-chair of the e-privacy law committee, co-chair of the privacy, security and emerging technology division, and vice chair of the biotechnology, healthcare and technology committee. He's also a member of the Bloomberg Healthcare Innovations Board, frequent speaker and writer of thought leadership pieces, and a certified information privacy professional. As you would expect, given his involvement with all of those eminent committees and boards, he's also a leading member of Squire's data privacy and cyber security practice team. And Elliot, you've done a great job today of making me feel entirely inadequate.
And far from true.
So, Elliot, thanks for taking the time to speak with us today on the California Consumer Privacy Act. Why don't we start with the basics? Can you give me a little bit of the background to this act? What was the driver behind bringing forward this law?
Sure. So California has a somewhat unique ability to bring a potential law through a ballot initiative where there's a direct vote on it. And maybe about 2 years ago or so now, there was a ballot initiative that was being pushed in the state for a very robust privacy law. My view is that California may have gotten a bit jealous of all the attention in Europe on the GDPR and wanted their own law, but it looked like it was going to pass, which can be a problem because if there's a ballot measure that passes, the legislature can't legislate anymore. Mm-hmm. So at the very, very last second, they struck a compromise to remove the ballot from being voted on and instead pass a law through the legislature that is called now the California Consumer Privacy Act that was, believe it or not, somewhat less draconian than what the ballot would have been and, believe it or not, clearer than what the ballot would have been.
Okay.
That has now gone through some amendments, and recently we got some proposed regulations from the California Attorney General, but that's how we got to where we are right now.
Okay, and is it a law yet, or is it to come into force soon?
It is a currently enacted law. It goes into effect January 1st, 2020, with a bit of a, probably not a grace period, but a delay in enforcement, likely until next July. The details are a bit complex, okay. But companies shouldn't think that they don't have to do anything until that time period. The law does go into effect January 1st.
Okay. Could you outline some of the key aspects of this law, please?
Sure. Think of it as a transparency and choice law more than anything. So what needs to be done? Well, there needs to be a pretty robust privacy notice, far more robust than typically applied to most companies before. Mm-hmm. There are four major rights. There's a right to know or right to access data. There's a right to deletion subject to a number of exceptions. There's a right to opt out of the sale of data, with sale meaning a very broad term, and a right to non-discrimination. You can't be discriminated against as a consequence of exercising those rights. There's some sort of ancillary requirements, like when you exercise a right to access, there's an accompanying portability right, meaning the right to get your information in a easily readable format. If money or other incentives are being provided to collect data, you have to disclose a lot of information about it. And there is a, perhaps most importantly, for financial institutions at least, a data breach private cause of action. which basically says if there is a data breach that results from not having reasonable security, then a private consumer can bring a cause of action and get what's called statutory damages, meaning you don't have to show you were injured by it. You get automatic damages that can go up to $750 per person, and that's really a big game changer for many folks.
$750, $750,000?
$750, but okay. If you have a big breach, that can easily be aggregated, right?
Gotcha. Okay, all right. Important to check that. Can I ask you, because you mentioned financial institutions there, obviously a lot of Dayon's customers are banks, financial institutions, insurance companies, and so on. How will this law affect or apply to our customers, do you think?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So there are a lot of state laws out there that because the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, which is the federal law that applies to financial institutions, and California's equivalent, the California Financial Information Privacy Act, because those laws have existed for so long and had relatively robust requirements, a lot of laws exempted financial institutions entirely from other laws if they were subject to that. The CCPA does not go that far. It says that some of the data, the information that's collected pursuant to those laws, is exempt from the CCPA, except for the data breach provision I just mentioned. But what that leaves is a bunch of information that financial institutions will have that's probably not subject to GLBA or CalFIPA, and therefore the CCPA still applies. And I'll give you maybe three examples. The first is that the CCPA still does apply to employee data, so a company's own employees. Now, there's a limited, I'll call it a moratorium for a year, where most, but not all, of the CCPA does not apply to the employee data. You still have to give a privacy notice, but you won't have to do individual rights for a year. A second exemption is for sort of business-to-business or B2B contact information. If you're collecting information about John Smith when he's acting as an employee of a company you're doing business with, that's exempt from, again, most of the CCPA requirements, but not all. You don't have to give a notice, but you do have to give a right to opt out of sale and a non-discrimination right. And if there's a data breach of that data, it's still subject to the private cause of action. There's some other exemptions that, you know, or reasons that financial institutions still need to think about the CCPA, because not all of the data they have is collected pursuant to. There's, for example, some narrow area around publicly available information that's collected that might not be entitled to the exemption. But the two main areas for most financial institutions will be their employee and B2B data, and if they happen to do any activity that's sort of non-financial in nature.
Okay, so if I take a practical example, let's say, as you know, Dayon software is regularly used by customers of banks for strong authentication purposes. Let's say somebody wants to log into the bank app that they're using. Would it capture that? Would it regulate that? Or how would it apply in that instance?
Yeah, in almost all cases, that sort of authentication information collected by a financial institution is going to be core to their financial functions of securing the data. And it's going to be subject to the exemption. I mean, I can think of reasons why in a very rare circumstance it might not, but in the vast majority of circumstances, that is going to be data that is non-public information subject to the GLBA and CalFIPA, and therefore not subject to the CCPA other than the data breach private cause of action.
So is it correct to summarize it as that data has already been is already being regulated under Gramm-Leach-Bliley, so therefore the CCPA doesn't apply to it any more strenuously, apart from the data breach obligations. It's already regulated, I suppose. Is that correct?
That's exactly right, which is, you know, good news for a lot of financial institutions, because if you look at the laws together, CCPA is, at least in my view, the far more robust draconian law than the GLBA and CalFIPA. With perhaps one or two exceptions, but in general, that's right.
Okay, thanks for clearing that up, Elliot. If you're an organization based, let's say, outside California, but the customer is based in California, let's say service provider is in on the East Coast somewhere, how will it apply in that instance?
So in general, the law is about individual, or it applies to data about individuals that are called consumers. And a consumer for this law means a California resident. Now, meaning the location of the company isn't determinative. In order to be subject to the law, you can be a business, which is for our friends who deal with GDPR equivalent of the controller. And in order to qualify, you need to be, quote, doing business in California. Mm. And whether you're doing business in California can be a very tricky issue depending on, you know, do you have a physical site? Mm. Where do you pay taxes? Do you have employees, et cetera? But if all the conduct is solely outside of California, right? So an East Coast company collecting information from a person who's not in California at the time, even if that person is a California resident, that's probably not subject to the CCPA. But just because you're a business that's not based in California doesn't mean that you're outside the scope of the law.
Okay, all right. So I suppose it leans in one direction if you're, or largely in one direction if your business is outside California, but you need to look at the particular situation as well on a case by case.
Absolutely right. If you're dealing with California persons, you need to get a close look at whether the law applies to you. More often than not, it probably will to a certain extent, but it is possible. Look at the sort of wholly outside of California as a small, narrow exception that probably won't apply in most cases.
Okay. One of the things that they tightened up recently under the new EU regime, EU GDPR, was around the definitions around biometric data, fingerprint, voice, face images, and so on. Has there been a change or a further definition around personal data or biometric data with the new CCPA?
Yeah, the CCPA expressly covers biometric data, but it doesn't really treat it any differently than other personal data. For example, we don't have a concept of the sensitive personal information like there is in Europe. And the California law doesn't have sort of a specific set of requirements around biometric like some other U.S. states do, you know, Illinois, Texas, and Washington's sort of biometric specific laws. So for the biometric data, it's subject to the CCPA, again, unless there's that financial exclusion that applies, but not sort of anything extra.
Okay. All right. Great. Thanks for that. We're very familiar with the concept of consent, as a result of the new European laws. Is consent required to process personal data under the CCPA, and what sort of conditions apply if it is?
So no, with one exception, the CCPA is not really a consent-based law. It's more of a transparency and choice law, more of opting out. The only time the law really requires consent is if you're going to sell data about minors. That's really the only time you need consent. The CCPA doesn't have sort of the equivalent of the GDPR's lawful basis for processing or legal basis for processing at all. So if you give notice and you comply with the individual rights requests, that's all you have to do. You don't really need consent. Now, there are other laws that could apply and make you get consent. Mm-hmm. Including for financial institutions subject to CalFIPA. For some types of sharing, there is an opt-in requirement as opposed to under GLBA that only has opt-out. But the CCPA itself does not have sort of a consent requirement other than for minors' data.
Okay, thank you. What about the restrictions on disclosure or sharing personal data under the CCPA?
Yeah, for a company that qualifies as a business, meaning who's determining the purpose and means of the processing, there's not really any restrictions on disclosure. It's more of transparency. You have to tell people about it. And in some cases, like if you're selling data, you have to let people exercise an opt-out. If you're a service provider, however, meaning sort of the downstream vendor, you will be, in order to qualify, you must be restricted from how you share the data, and it must be strictly limited to the business purpose of that disclosure. So you can't just disclose forever you want. Arguably, you'd have to flow down some contractual requirement, and you can't use it for your own purposes or disclose it for your own purposes, but those are the main restrictions.
Okay.
And I suppose if you're buying data as a third party and then selling it, again, you need to do some more notice. You might have to give people choice, but again, it's not sort of a direct restriction.
You mentioned earlier on security standards. I think you said you used the phrase reasonable security standards. Is there kind of particular specificity required from the security around data, or how do they manage that in the new law?
it's a good question. So the CCPA itself does not have an affirmative obligation to secure data. There's nothing in the CCPA that says you must secure data. Pre-existing California law has some requirements around you must secure data. And again, there's some exceptions if you're a financial institution. The reason why security matters, though, is for the data breach private cause of action to proceed, it needs to be the result of not having reasonable security. Now, your question, what does reasonable security mean? Well, your guess is as good as mine. There's some guidance going back several years in a different context from the California Attorney General that points to some third-party standards as what they mean, at least as an example of reasonable security, but it's not defined in the law. So it's going to be something that's going to be litigated. It's something you should, you know, talk to your security people about. You should talk to the lawyers about to figure out if you have reasonable security. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be strictly defined, which is what we love to do in America, is vague standards that lead to interpretation.
What about the retention or deletion requirements? Surely they must be specified.
Yeah, gotta love it again. No, not really. So we don't have a imposed, required by law, data minimization principle. There's some suggestion in the law that's kind of buried in the definition that processing should be reasonably necessary and proportionate. It sounds a little bit like the GDPR language, but it's not strictly required. There is a requirement to maintain record keeping for 2 years when people exercise rights. Mm-hmm. But it's not, it's sort of the other way. Like, you must keep for 2 years, not you're prohibited from keeping. So from a deletion standpoint, it's really if someone exercises their right to deletion, you must delete, subject to, you know, about 10 exceptions that are so broad they swallow the rule most of the time. But other than that, there's not really an affirmative deletion requirement.
Okay. What about non-compliance? What are the penalties, I suppose, for non-compliance, and how is the CCPA enforced?
Right. So almost all of the law is likely to be only enforceable by the California Attorney General. And for most violations, it'll be $2,500 per violation. For an intentional violation, it goes up to $7,500 per violation. But there's no express private cause of action other than for data breach. Now, clever plaintiffs will probably try to rope this law into other California laws, like the unfair competition law, perhaps the Private Attorneys General Act, but not much other than that. Now, for the Attorney General enforcement, there's this sort of 30-day period where you're supposed to be able to cure before there's really enforcement. We'll have to see how that plays out. I mean, some things are probably curable. Some things may not be curable. And if you went to a large business with a big operation and said, you have 30 days to overhaul things, I don't know if everyone could do that anyway.
Yeah.
But there's at least conceptually a 30-day cure period. Same thing for the data breach cause of action. There's a 30-day cure period. But if you have a data breach, I'm not sure how you cure that if it's already happened. Yeah, maybe you can fix the security and provide credit monitoring. Again, it's going to be something that I predict heavily litigated, and you know, financial institutions, you know, should really pay a lot of attention to that in particular.
Okay. Final question, Elliot. You know, looking at this over the last 6 months, I mean, there's a bunch of states now with bills and laws and acts at various stages. And it looks like we're moving to a situation where we're going to have multiple privacy laws across multiple U.S. states. And we might even have a federal law. How is this jigsaw all going to work, do you think?
So, again, we love a complicated regime here. And, you know, for folks familiar with U.S. privacy law, this is just, I think, the latest iteration. We've always had a patchwork of laws of 50 different states and different federal laws. If you go back to our data breach laws, we still have no federal law. They've been talking about it for over a decade, two decades maybe, ever since California, again, being the first, as California often is, to pass the data breach law in 2003. the same thing is going to happen here. We're going to continue to see more and more of a patchwork develop. And I think with most clients that we, Esquire, are working with in particular, there's a decision to be made, right? Are you going to keep doing a sort of incremental patchwork of a privacy and security program? Or are you going to try to implement, you know, one program that as much as possible works everywhere? And we're seeing most companies view California, maybe not as a wake-up call, but as a sort of maybe the impetus to say, you know what, we're not going to have a separate GDPR program and a separate California program and a separate Brazil program. We're going to just sort of take privacy very seriously. We're going to have a robust program. And that's much better than playing whack-a-mole for the next few years as more and more states pass laws, because they will. I think, as you said, there's something like 13, 14, 15 states with pending legislation. I predict at least 5 or 6 of them will pass laws in the next year. And, you know, as you look to the CCPA and say, yeah, okay, this law is coming into effect, I need to do something about it, you know, obviously business call, but more and more clients are saying, we're not going to just limit this to California or anything like that. We're going to just do one big program. And hopefully California is the high bar, right, that we don't see things that go much more robust than California. Although, not to get off track, there's sort of this CCPA 2.0. There's yet another ballot initiative that is coming that could be even more strict. So poor companies in California having a, you know, getting tossed and turned around with all these laws changing.
Well, Elliot, thank you very much for your time today. I really appreciate your insights into this interesting and important area. I hope you, the listener, also found it useful. And if you'd like to hear more on this topic or indeed on Daon and its products, please feel free to email us at info@daon.com. And you'll also find lots of information on our website at daon.com. Elliot, thank you again, and thank you for listening.